and welcome to the Libby's podcast, conversations with authors who've been shortlisted for the British Book Awards, lovingly known as the Nibbies. I'm your host and longtime Nibbies fan, Hannah McInnes. These awards celebrate books and everyone who makes them, honouring the entire creative, collaborative journey of a book, from the author's mind to the reader's hand. And that's what we're going to do on this podcast. Chat to some of today's best-loved authors about their books, their writing, what's gone on behind the scenes to get them to where they are, and those lovely moments when they and the books they've created have found their readers.
I'm Ravina Gurun, author of This Book Kills, Catch Your Death, and some children's fantasy books as well.
So tell us the basic premise of This Book Kills, for those who haven't read it, which I know is a very small amount of people, but just for those people.
So it's a young adult thriller about a girl who goes to a very elite boarding school, and she sort of like flies under the radar, but then she writes a short story which is used as an inspiration for a murder, and if she doesn't figure out who the killer is, then she'll be next, but also her place at this boarding school will be in jeopardy.
So what was the inspiration? Where did this idea come to you from then?
So I had this very like basic idea of girl writes a short story that inspires murder, and I started asking myself, like, why would anyone be inspired by someone's short story from like a creative writing class? Wouldn't that make it like really obvious who it was? And I just started like building from there, those sort of like weird concepts basically. That was the basic premise, and then I just threw in a bunch of themes that were really important to me to write about.
Just taking a step back before we come more into what the book's about and who it centres around. You are a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
How do you find time to also be an author and to write a very successful book?
There's no like magic, no magic recipe. It's literally just like evenings and weekends. And I think I find if I've got less time to do something, I'm more likely to actually be focused and just get it done rather than like, I'm sure if I had a whole day to do something, I would just procrastinate half of it because I'd be like, there's so much time. So, yeah, I think it's just focused.
Basically. And how do they complement each other? The law and the writing, or contradict each other or work together in your life?
For me, I think it's really nice to have something that's not about writing, and it's really nice to just like be challenged in a different way, like when I go to work and like use that side of my brain and sort of have that like intellectual challenge and then come home and just like be creative. It's nice, those two separate distinct things.
And I think if I'm right, your experience in law is also part of the inspiration for this book, isn't it?
Yeah.
In what perhaps you could explain how?
So I decided I wanted to be a lawyer when I was about 15. And someone had said to me, oh, lawyers do a lot of reading. And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds like something I would like to do. And I sort of went to law school, and then I started training at like a city law firm, like just how you would imagine law would be like. And I remember feeling like really out of place with some of my peers and out of place in the environment that I was in, because I didn't feel as confident as my peers, who just seemed to like know exactly what they were doing and exactly what to say. And I thought, okay, I'm just gonna like put my head down and just do my work. And someone said something to me which like quite upset me. They were like, oh, you can't do that if you want to be a lawyer. You need to be able to like be really chatty and speak to people and like be really sure of yourself. And I was like quite upset by that, because I was like, I don't want to change my entire personality in order to do this career that I've wanted to do for so long. And it was my first boss who said to me, change the way that you think about confidence, because there is that one kind you're thinking of that your peers seem to have, which is like the person who's always willing to speak up and like share what they're thinking. And that is one type of confidence, but there is another type of confidence, which is just like quiet confidence. And it's just like a belief in yourself. Like if you've worked really hard for your spot, then you, like, you've earned your spot, you deserve that spot, and no one should be able to tell you otherwise. And I wanted to put that idea into this book, Kills, that idea of, like, it doesn't matter what everyone else is doing, you just need to, like, be sure of yourself.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And why do you feel like a children's fiction book that's aimed at teenagers is a good place to examine some of these big themes? I mean, confidence, but also race and power and privilege.
You know, for me, like, young adult books, kid lit, they're so formative. They really, like, shape who you are. They shape the type of reader you are. They're the books that, like, stay with me, like, years and years later. Whereas, you know, I'll read adult books and they're great, but they might not stick with me the same way as some of the books I read as a teenager. And this book, Kills, was a book that I would have wanted to read when I was that age. You know, I never saw characters who looked like me, and definitely not in a, like, a thriller setting. And it's nice to basically have that. This is a book that I just would have wanted to read as a teenager, basically.
I mean, you've really answered this next question in that, but I suppose that is what you wanted your readers. Do you envisage your reader? Who is your reader, and what do you want them to take away from it?
For me, it's those kids that, you know, struggle with those ideas of, like, confidence and, like, feeling like they're not, like, they don't belong. Those South Asian kids who want to see themselves represented. Those kids who are just worried about being really quiet and, whilst everyone else seems to be know exactly what they're doing. And I want kids to, A, take away the idea that, like, you can do anything. Hopefully, like, there'll be kids who see themselves in the character of Jess, that, you know, she looks like them, she shares their cultural background, but also that there'll be kids who take away that message of, if you've worked really hard for something, then you've earned that, and it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. So hopefully, like, that's what readers take away.
Yeah, so those more societal impulses or things that inspired you and spurred you on to write this. But I also understand that you are a big Agatha Christie fan, and there is an inspiration from her too.
Yeah. When I was younger, I would read the endings of books first, because I wanted to make sure that the books would have, like, a happy ending. So I would, like, read a couple of, like, pages, establish who the characters were, and then skip along to the end and make sure the character, like, lived. And I was doing that with Agatha Christie, and I would, like, establish who, like, all the suspects were, and I would skip to the end, and obviously I would reveal who the murderer was before I'd read the book, and I would always be like, oh, I would have figured that out, now I need to go back and see how she did it. And obviously I wouldn't have figured it out, but there was one time I, like, skipped to the end, saw who the murderer was, and I was like, that's, I wasn't expecting this character at all. And I was like, in the back of my head, I was like, maybe I should read this book how it was intended to be read. And I really, like, I really get something out. I'll have what Agatha Christie intended, basically. Like, I'll get to know all the characters and the motivations. And I'll have that, oh my gosh, moment at the end that I was missing. But, you know, Agatha Christie taught me, like, there are books where, like, you don't know, like, how it's going to end, but you know, like, there will be a nice resolution. Like, it's Cozy Crime. Like, you know the murderer is going to be caught. There is going to be a solution, which is still really comforting for me, even if I'm not, like, reading the end first. So Agatha Christie definitely changed the way that I read books.
By teaching you not to read the end before the beginning. I love that. And do you write your ends and know your ends before you start?
Yeah, so with this book, Kills, I knew, like, who the murderer was going to be. And, like, the first draft was quite simple. It was, like, a straight line through of, like, Jess investigates. She speaks to character one, character two, character three, and it all, like, leads to the murderer. And then I added a bunch of, like, other, like, red herrings and clues and stuff in, but I always had that core, like, plot in my mind, so I knew exactly where the story was going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's an intriguing, it's quite a complicated thing to do, isn't it? Sort of putting all those things in place for us to unpeel, but you have to have unpeeled the onion completely first.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's almost like building out for me. Like, I start with that simple idea and then layer it in, like, multiple drafts. Like, this book, Kills, went through, like, multiple rounds of drafting, basically, where I added additional things. And it was like layering. But if I tried to do that all at once in the first draft, it would have been like too much and too complicated. And I would have lost track of what was going on. So it's a process.
Talking about the process, how did you find, or do you find, the publishing process and the journey that you go on with that? Are there particularly memorable, standout moments from that for this book?
Yeah, so this book feels obviously like multiple rounds of edits, and I absolutely loved working with my editor. I had two on This Book Kills, and they're both like absolutely brilliant. And the thing about me is I get so caught up in like sometimes really overcomplicating things to the point where things don't even make sense to me anymore. And it's really nice to have like an editor like unpick exactly what I'm trying to go for, so I'm not like overcomplicating anything, basically. And then I didn't really know how many people like are actually behind the scenes working on a book. Like you've got editors, you've got readers, you've got copy editors, and they're all like playing a very important part. And like you've got like the cover designer who's making like a really brilliant cover. And it's really nice to be part of like a team rather than just me.
And it's the combination of both, I imagine, that gives the satisfaction. It's you on your own for quite a long time writing, and then suddenly you're part of this team. Is it the fact that they're both such different scenarios? You get a lot from both of those things.
Yeah, I think it's nice to be on my own, like sort of work out exactly what I want the story to be and figure out like the core of the story. So like This Book Kills had a few things that I knew I was never going to want to change. And I worked with my editor who knew exactly what like the core of the story was,
yeah,
and helped me sort of build out all those other things whilst sort of staying true to that core of like the character of Jess and the journey that she goes on.
Mm. And you mentioned the cover and the story behind the cover. Tell us about that, because I know that you all worked really hard to find a cover that works as well for social media, which is so incredibly important. You can tell us more about that. And as a thumbnail on TikTok, for example, and also a cover that stands out on the table of a bookshop. So perhaps you could describe, because of course we are listening to this rather than seeing, describe the cover and the work and the thought that went into it. I absolutely love it, I should say.
So it's a blue cover with the white This Book Kills, and then it's got the red sort of like reminiscent of blood. She wrote The Perfect Murder, someone carried it out and now she's next, ... and then the like little blood spatters, and then we've got like the character of Jess sort of like illustrated, and she's falling and there's like a pen falling out of her hand. And I think I like Osborne had a very strong idea of like having that blue background, but there was it took a while just to get a sense of exactly what the cover was going to be. So the original like publication date for it was I think September 2022, and they like pushed it back because they wanted to make sure that the cover was absolutely like there and it would like really stick out and like build a brand for me, basically.
And what about that social media presence? How much do you feel you interacted with that, and how important was that to this book? TikTok, Instagram?
Oh, there were some amazing people on TikTok who posted about like the book, and there are a few like viral videos of them like talking about imagine you get a text and someone's like texting you saying you've inspired this murder, and it was just brilliant. And then on Instagram, people have just taken like really amazing photos of like the book with like academic items like notebooks and like pens and stuff, and like really leaning into that like academia vibe. So there's just been some brilliant people who've really like taken the concepts and just like run with it, which I think is so great because, you know, I'm not a visual person. So when people do that, I'm like, that's incredible. Like, that's a real talent.
So that's interacting. So you get a real interaction and you get a real boost from the social media presence.
Yeah.
But what about meeting your readers in real life? How has that happened? And what sorts of feedback have you had from them?
I've met readers occasionally, I'll do school visits. I don't do very many because I've got a full-time job, but I do school visits, and I was lucky enough to do a few festivals last year where I got to meet some readers as well. And it's always so nice because there's always, like, you write a book and you're sort of almost disconnected from the fact that it's going to end up in a reader's hand at the end of it. Like, I wrote This Book Kills 2 years ago. Now it's 2024, isn't it? It was like 3 years ago now. Mm. And I'm almost like, you write it and then you forget there's going to be an end product that, like, people you've never met are going to, like, read it and form their own opinions on it. And I'll occasionally have, like, South Asian kids coming up to me and being like, I saw myself in Jess. I saw, like, my culture in her. And that's always, like, so touching. It always, like, makes me a bit emotional when they do that because I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. Or I'll have kids who've come up and, like, their book will be just be, like, so well-worn because they've read it multiple times. I'm like, that's brilliant. You probably know the book better than I do at this point. So, yeah, that's brilliant.
So it makes a real difference meeting people in real life and hearing those stories.
Yeah.
What about seeing it on... We talked about how the cover was so important to be recognisable on social media, but what about seeing it in bookshops?
Oh, that's like... I don't think... There's no way to describe what that's like. Like, you go into a bookshop. I remember going into a bookshop when I was little and I would look at all the books on the shelves and I would browse and I would be like, I wish I could take all of these home. And then it's just the most surreal feeling going in and, like, seeing my books on tables and seeing them on... no words, really. It's always that... No matter how many times I see it, there's always that little bit of shock of, oh, that's my book on the table.
Mm. You... If I have got this right, you published in the same year your second book, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that an enormous pressure or does it keep the sort of, keep yourself busy, keep the adrenaline going or a bit of both of those things?
Oh, I'm someone who gets very bored if I don't have like that sort of something to do, basically. So when I'm like, there's a gap in like my editing schedule or something, I'm like, what do I do with all my free time now? Like, I need something to like focus on. And so my second book was called Catch Your Death. And I think it would have technically would have been like a year later would be more typical. It would have been published January 2024. But it had that sort of like winter vibe that we really wanted to like capture. Mm. And we just worked very quickly on the edits, basically. But I like the pressure, so.
You said before that you do your writing, you know, you fit it in where you can around work.
Yeah.
But what about where ideas come to you? I mean, do you sit down? A lot of authors I'm finding surprise me because they say that the creativity happens when they just sit down and they kind of force it. Is that the same with you, or do ideas, are you sitting there pretending to be hard at work at the law firm and actually just in a daydream about your novels?
Ideas come to me, like, quite randomly, and, like, the way that I write my books is I'll come up with just a really weird concept of, like, what would happen if, like, this happened, and I'll jot that out, and then it will often be, like, I've come up with this weird concept, and then I don't have a solution for it. And then that's where I will, like, sit down and plot and just try to work out a solution. But, yeah, the ideas themselves just, yeah, come to me randomly. Sometimes when I'm not trying to, like, force it, if I'm not, like, if I'm trying to sit there at my laptop and, like, empty Word document, come up with five ideas, I probably wouldn't be able to.
Mm. You said you love the pressure and... You know, so much has happened in quite a short amount of time. And I'm sure people will listen who think, I would love to do that. I would love to write fiction, maybe even nonfiction, and fit it in around a very busy life and a very busy job. Just love to hear your thoughts, advice, I guess, to those people.
I think I'll meet a lot of people and they'll say to me, like, I've wanted to write a book for ages and I'm on... chapter 3 and I've been stuck on chapter 3 for like months and months and months and I don't know what I'm going to like do next. And I think sometimes people compare their writing to like a published book and be like, it's not up to that standard, what am I doing wrong, and I need to like tinker with these first three chapters before I can move on. And my advice is always just, it's not like the prettiest way of drafting, but square bracket, say like a summary of this is what's going to happen in this chapter, and then just move on and just get something down on the page. It's all about just like getting something down, because there's so many like rounds of edits that happen that that first draft ends up being like a very small like portion of a book's journey. And yeah, just getting the words down, basically just turning your brain off, like turn the editor brain off and just get the words on the page.
It does seem to be a very common thread of advice. That it was sort of what I was saying earlier in terms of sitting down and forcing things, because often people think of a creative process as something that you wander around or it'll come to you like that, but a lot of writers say just sit down, a bit like making yourself go to the gym, and make sure it happens, and be I suppose very disciplined with that.
Yeah I think there's a sense of if you wait for the words to come, they're never going to come. Like, there's always that sense of, like, I'll finish my day and I just, the last thing I want to do is write. And there's no, there's nothing glamorous about saying it, but sometimes you just have to sit down and just, like, make yourself do it. Because ultimately you're going to have, like, 6, 7, 8, 9 days in a row, a month, 2 months of, like, I don't feel like I'm ready to write. And then you'll never do it, because there's very rarely will there be a day where you wake up and suddenly like all the stars are aligned and you're like, this is it. Like, I'm ready. I'm going to write like 20,000 words and it's all going to be brilliant. Like, that's just not, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Being realistic. We need some, some reality, a reality check. You mentioned Agatha Christie, but you have some other big influences or author-wise, don't you? I think Jacqueline Wilson.
Oh, yes. Yes, Jacqueline Wilson is a huge one for me. I met her briefly at Cheltenham Festival and I was completely starstruck. Like, I could barely speak. I think she had an influence on so many, like, people who were my age. She just announced her adult book and I think basically everyone I knew on Instagram was, like, screaming, like, Jacqueline Wilson is writing an adult book for, like, all the kids that grew up with her. And just, yeah, she's brilliant. Because she writes about, like those real issues, and she doesn't sugarcoat things, and like that's a reality for so many kids, and she like doesn't talk down to kids, like she'll just say it as it is, and that's, yeah, brilliant.
My last question, you have been nominated, of course, for Nibby. I just wonder what that means to you or how that feels.
Honestly unbelievable. I think, like, growing up, I wasn't seeing myself in books. And I would rewrite characters in my head so that, like, they looked like me. And, like, I wasn't seeing myself in, like, authors necessarily. I didn't think that was a career path that I could do. So now to, like, be sat here and to be nominated for, like, my debut is just, yeah. I can't put it into words. I'm so, like, incredibly grateful to, like, the British Book Awards for, like, yeah, nominating me for, basically. It's just been unbelievable that, like, this book about this, like, British Indian kid has been, like, taken into the hearts of so many readers. I just, yeah, can't believe it.
Well, thoroughly well deserved. Thank you so much for talking to us about it. Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to subscribe to the series to hear more conversations with Nibby's authors. And we'd love it if you'd rate it and leave us a review. Do visit thebookseller.com/British-book-awards to find out more about the industry's biggest celebration of books and all who make them. This podcast was produced by Heavy Entertainment.